Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. All rights reserved. Chapter 20. Kelly thoroughly enjoyed cleaning out Billy's house. Perhaps because of all the chaos that reigned in her mind, she always enjoyed putting things in order. She began in the kitchen and, 2 hours later, had just sat down with a cup of tea to contemplate her mother's spatula and wire whisk when Joe and Curly arrived. "How's it going?" he asked, fixing himself a cup of instant coffee. "So far, so good." She looked at the utensils lying on the table beside her cup and asked, "Did you ever know Billy to bake anything?" "He used to get a mix and whip up a batch of brownies every once in a while, but that was about it." "Did you ever eat any of them?" "Sure, lots of times. Why?" "I don't know. Just curious, I guess," she admitted, then changed the subject. "You want anything from here? I'm sure Billy would want you to have whatever you wanted." "Wrong," he replied, much to her surprise. "I offered to buy his tools, but he said he wanted you to have them." Howard had owned few tools because they didn't interest him, and he and Bernice had cleaned out what few they'd owned along with everything else. Consequently, when Kelly started redoing the house, she often found herself lacking the proper equipment. One day, when Billy noticed her trying to pound in a nail with a rock, he gave her a long, silent lecture about the need to use the right tool for the right job. After that, she made it a point to buy the right tool for the job, but she still had a long way to go. Kelly got up and opened the large wooden box Billy kept in the corner behind the kitchen door and removed some of the tools she had seen him use so often as they worked together. "Why don't you take them?" she offered. "I don't even know what a lot of them are, and just keeping them for sentimental reasons seems like such a waste." Joe picked up a perfectly balanced hammer while he pondered the offer. "Why don't we share them?" he suggested. "I can borrow them when I need them, and you can hug them and talk to them the rest of the time." She then realized that he'd picked up the hammer to keep her from hitting him with it when he made that remark. "By the way, and in spite of my mental deficiencies," she changed the subject again, "I'm quite capable of shoveling my own driveway." "Is that your way of telling me you don't want me to plow it?"
"You got it."
"But it's a long driveway, and there's no need—" "I want to do it," she interrupted him. "That's a good enough reason for me." "You know what your problem is?" he asked, foolishly believing she would want him to tell her what it was. She didn't even want to hear it from her therapist. Why in the world would she want to hear it from a wood guy? "You're stubborn," he told her anyhow, "just like my mother." Oddly enough, she had never counted stubbornness among her many problems. Wishy-washy, neurotic, periodically antisocial, leaning towards sexual deviancy, and possibly suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, yes. But stubbornness, let alone that akin to somebody's mother? That struck her as a perfectly normal and even laudable problem. "Thank you very much," she told him sincerely. "Did I ever tell you that talking to you gives me a headache?" he asked, confused by yet another of her apparent non sequiturs. "No, I don't believe you ever did."
"Well, it does."
"Well, then why don't you leave?"
she smiled at him.
And he did. Kelly saved Billy's bedroom for last because it contained practically all of his personal items, just as his childhood room in his parents' home had. At first it seemed odd that he'd limit himself this way because he had access to the whole house. On the other hand, she soon acknowledged that, had she found all those men's magazines and women's lingerie catalogs on the coffee table in his living room rather than in the bottom drawer of his bureau, she might have reacted differently. Discovering them there reminded her yet again that Billy had been a man, and probably one of the very few who honestly would have admitted that he liked those publications because of the pictures. In spite of the picture of herself lying on the beach, Kelly didn't think of Billy as a sexual being, but she didn't think this had anything to do with his mental state. Like baby mice from different litters raised together since birth, their bond sprang from a deep kinship. True, when Nana died, she did want to make love to him, but that wasn't a sexual desire at all. She wanted to do it because it was the only way she could think of to communicate all the love she wanted him to feel at that time. Theirs was a sensual rather than sexual bond. They no more would have thought of each other sexually than they would have a brother or sister.
Or so Callie believed until she found Billy's wallet in his bureau drawer tucked between two stacks of neatly folded underwear. In addition to $3.57 and Joe's expired driver's license, the wallet contained numerous pictures. These she spread out on the top of the bureau so she could examine them more carefully. Two photos of his parents, 15 of all the Nanas and Curly in various poses, and another one of herself lying naked on the beach. Pretty much sums up the good things in life, far as I can tell. Joe's sudden appearance behind her caused Callie to jump. I wonder how many more of these there are floating around, she laughed, picking up the infamous Beach Bunny photo and sticking it in the pocket of her jeans. At least one I know of, Joe replied, benignly staring at the ceiling while Curly examined the boxes filled with Billy's clothes on the floor. Don't tell me. It's thumbtacked to your bedroom wall with those of Justine's and all the other hot babes in town. Callie laughed again as she arranged the remaining photos in a neat pile. Wrong again, he countered, stretching out on Billy's bed in a manner that made her think thoughts she didn't want to think at that particular moment. I use notches in the headboard to remind me of them. I tagged your picture next to my calendar from the lumber mill to remind me that neither of us is getting any younger. Thanks for the tactful reminder, she told him, but I'm not getting any dumber either. As long as you're here, you can take these boxes of Billy's clothes to the church for the next rummage sale. They're expecting them. I think you're suffering from an approach avoidance conflict, he replied, heaving his bulk off the bed. Sounds like a pretty heady concept to me. Where'd you learn about it? I went to a seminar on sensitivity training for loggers. Oh. She shook her head at the very thought of such a gathering. I think it's time for another one. She put a stack of magazines on top of the boxes he was holding. Here, drop these off at the dump on your way by. I'll keep Curly till you get back. After Joe left, Kelly turned her attention to the drawers of the old table Billy used as a desk. Inside the first, she found pencils and ballpoint pens bearing the names and logos of local businesses, plus hundreds of membership cards. Some of these Billy had obviously received in the mail with a request for contributions. He'd carefully printed Billy on the signature line of each and every one of them, thereby claiming membership in numerous conservation groups as well as political action committees and record clubs. In addition to these, the drawer also contained many legitimate, but expired, membership cards that others had given him. Billy had put his name on these, too, but above those of their original owners. As Callie sifted through these, she got yet another intimate glimpse of the people who lived in her world, thanks to Billy Paradise. Who would have guessed that Justine belonged to a health club? She asked Curly, who had assumed Joe's place on Billy's bed. Or that Chucky would give Billy an expired membership to the American Society of Funeral Directors. Or that Joe belonged to the Nature Conservancy and the Book of the Month Club. Curly thumped his tail twice when he heard Joe's name, yawned, and went back to sleep. Billy also could claim Andy's outdated membership in the American Medical Association, Penn's expired one in the Addison Chamber of Commerce, and Bernie's in the American Bar Association, which proved they probably took anyone, three from the National Education Association, one each from the Teamsters Union and American Library Association, and two each from the National Organization for Women and the National Rifle Association. Area farmers and their families had made him a member of the American Dairy, Guernsey, and Holstein Association, Addison's 4-H, many times, and the National Pork Producers Council. Thanks to others in town, herself among them, Billy also could have driven in New Hampshire, New York, Massachusetts, Maine, Ohio, Oregon, Indiana, California, and Florida, if he had known how to drive and didn't mind using an expired license. In the second drawer of Billy's desk, Callie discovered how he could afford all these memberships and licenses. It contained every kind of expired credit card imaginable. MasterCard, Visa, Discovery, and American Express cards, those from Sears, Victoria's Secret, long-gone department stores from bygone eras, and every major calling card and gasoline credit card filled the drawer. Callie couldn't help smiling when she saw them. Until then, she thought she was the only one who saved her expired cards for Billy. As she bagged them up, she considered calling Deborah Kane to see if the Historical Society would want them, but then she changed her mind. "Maybe I'm mistaken," she informed the sleeping dog. But I bet a lot of people gave Billy their driver's license with ugly pictures and expired credit cards they normally would have cut to pieces because they didn't want anyone else to have access to them. It doesn't seem right to violate that trust. Curly didn't wake up long enough to reply, but he didn't need to. She had made up her mind. Callie saved Billy's toy box for last because it evoked such bittersweet memories. Some people just never got the hang of giving Billy gifts. They decided he possessed the mind of a 5-year-old, then bought him presents for those in that age group. But regardless of his mental capacity, Billy was never like a child of that age, even when he was of that age. As he grew older, he became less and less like that mythical child every day. People who really knew and understood him wrapped up their broken appliances for him to dismantle. The Christmas he described as the best ever, his parents gave him a new bike and their old vacuum cleaner. And she had given him a prism and her broken hair dryer. For each gift that made him glow with delight, though, he amassed a lot of kid toys that meant nothing to him at all. What Billy really treasured, he kept in his toy box. The top layer of Billy's box consisted of his collection of hats. He had billed caps bearing the name of every major sports team and New England crafts and musical festival, a hard hat, a fireman's hat, a beret, a pirate's hat, a cowboy's hat, and a chef's hat. Below these lay a neatly folded Superman cape, a new addition Callie had never seen before. It didn't surprise her, though. When they were children, she and Billy loved to play dress-up, and the two of them had spent many hours recreating plays of meaning to no one but themselves. "Did the two of you enjoy playing cowboys and Indians?" Billy's mother once asked when he doffed his cowboy hat while Callie removed 3 turkey feathers from her hair before lunch. "Billy's a famous scientist," she informed his mother solemnly, "and I'm a rare bird he's trying to save from extinction." "What a big vocabulary you have for such a little girl," his mother had exclaimed. Callie couldn't understand her surprise. Billy knew exactly what she meant. Given this, she could easily envision him admiring some adult Superman Halloween costume and that person giving him the cape as a gift, much to his delight. Beneath Billy's hat and cape, Callie found his first toy toolkits, which so quickly had given way to the real thing. And below that, she found 2 packages wrapped in brown paper and securely tied with string. Both had her name on them. One was in Billy's handwriting. The other was not. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.